All right, welcome to your personalized deep dive. You sent over a bunch of articles and research all about picking the right injection molding machine. So clearly this is something you're digging into. And honestly, after going through the material, I can see why. There's way more to it than I think either of us realize. Like, did you know that something as simple as the shape of your product can totally change what kind of machine you need? We're talking thin-walled parts, complex structures, even how fast that plastic cools down. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It's really all about finding that perfect match between your product design and the plastic you're using, the mold itself, and of course, what your machine can actually handle. There's no one-size-fits-all here.
It really is like fitting all these puzzle pieces together perfectly.
Mm.
So one of the first things that jumped out at me from your sources was this whole concept of product projection area. Help me wrap my head around this because it sounds a little jargony.
It's actually super practical, and it's essential for figuring out how much force you need to keep that mold closed when you're injecting the plastic. Imagine all that force, all that molten plastic being injected, trying to push the mold open. The clamping force of the machine has to be strong enough to counteract all of that.
So basically, the bigger the product, the more force it pushes outwards, and the stronger the clamping force needs to be.
Exactly. But it's not just about the overall size. It's more about the area your product would take up if you, like, laid it flat. Right on the mold surface where it closes. Think of it kind of like the product's footprint.
Okay, that makes it easier to visualize.
Mm-hmm.
So even a small part, if it's spread out with a big footprint, that could still need a pretty strong clamping force.
Precisely. And that's why calculating that product projection area is so important. That gives you the minimum clamping force your machine's going to need. And then on top of that, you've got to add a safety margin, which could be another 30 to 50%, depending on the project.
That's a good point. You don't want to be cutting it too close and risk something going wrong in the middle of the molding cycle. But let's go back to something you mentioned before, about the shape of the product. You were saying that even that can change what machine you need.
Oh, yeah, for sure. It plays a huge role. Think about it like this. If you were trying to drink a thick milkshake through a thin straw, it would be pretty tough, right?
Yeah, more trouble than it's worth, probably.
Exactly. And thin-walled products, they kind of pose the same problem.
Yeah.
Because the plastic cools down so quickly in a thin section, you have to inject it with a much higher pressure to fill that mold before it solidifies. And that means you need a more powerful machine that can handle that high pressure consistently.
So kind of counterintuitive, but something thin and flimsy might actually need a stronger machine than a thicker part.
You got it. Now imagine those, like, IKEA furniture pieces with all those crazy interlocking parts and complex structures. When you're molding something complex like that, it's basically like that furniture is resisting the flow of the plastic as it tries to get into all the nooks and crannies.
Oh, man. I can definitely feel that frustration when I'm putting together one of those pieces. So how does that resistance affect the machine?
Well, that increased resistance means you need even higher injection pressure to push the material where it needs to go. But remember, all that pressure is also pushing outwards against the mold itself. So you also need higher clamping force to make sure that mold stays shut tight. Otherwise, your part won't come out right.
Wow, so something as simple as the shape can have a domino effect on everything else.
Absolutely. And we're just getting started. We haven't even talked about how big the mold itself is yet. Doesn't matter if you have a machine that can do 100 tons of clamping force, if that mold is physically too big to even fit inside.
That's a good point. I actually made that mistake once. I thought a mold would fit, and it was just a hair too big. We had to scramble to find a bigger machine at the last minute. Not a fun experience.
I can imagine. So before you even think about clamping force, you need to check those mold dimensions against the machine's specs. Make sure it'll fit. And pay close attention to the template size and the tie bar spacing.
Hold on, back up for a sec. What exactly is tie bar spacing and why does it matter?
Okay, so you know there's four strong vertical bars that support the clamping unit of the machine. Those are the tie bars. And the tie bar spacing is just the distance between them. And that distance basically tells you how wide of a mold you can actually fit in there.
So even if the clamping force is good, if the tie bar spacing is too narrow, the mold just won't fit.
You got it. It's like trying to fit a king-size bed frame through a tiny doorway. No matter how hard you push, it ain't gonna happen.
I'm really starting to see how all these pieces are connected.
Uh-huh.
You can't just focus on one thing in isolation.
Exactly. And believe it or not, we haven't even started talking about the materials themselves yet, which can have a huge impact on the whole process and the machine you end up needing.
Wait, there's more. I thought plastic was just plastic.
Oh, no. We've just scratched the surface. Different plastics behave so differently when they're melted and injected. Some flow easily like water. Others are super thick and gooey like honey. And then there are reinforcements.
Reinforcements, like adding stuff to make the plastic stronger.
That's a great way to think about it. Things like glass fibers get added a lot to boost strength and durability. But just like adding ingredients to a recipe changes the texture and the taste, those reinforcements can really change how the plastic behaves during molding.
So picking the right material isn't just about strength or color. It's about how well it flows, how much it shrinks, how much pressure the machine needs.
You're getting it. And we haven't even gotten to how those reinforcements can change the shrinkage of the plastic as it cools. Remember that analogy about trying to fit into jeans that shrunk in the wash?
Oh yeah, I know that feeling all too well. So picking the wrong machine because you didn't think about shrinkage, that could be just as bad.
You got it. Imagine you have a material that shrinks a lot as it cools down. If the machine isn't strong enough to counteract that shrinking force, the mold could warp, or your part could end up with all kinds of defects. You need to make sure the machine can handle those quirks of the material and keep everything under control.
This is blowing my mind. It feels like we've already covered so much, but I'm guessing there's still a lot more to learn about materials and how they impact the process.
You're right, there is. But before we get into all the nitty-gritty of the materials themselves, I want to shift gears a bit and talk about something that's just as important, the physical limitations of the molding machine itself. Because even with the perfect material and a perfectly sized mold, if the machine can't handle the job, it's game over.
That makes perfect sense. But before we move on to machine specs, I'm really curious to hear more about how those materials actually behave during injection. Can we unpack that a bit more? You mentioned reinforcements. I'm really intrigued by how something so small can have such a big impact.
You bet. Let's dive deeper into that world of reinforcements and all the cool stuff they do in the molding process. You might be surprised at just how much power those tiny fibers really have. All right, so think about it this way. You've got your base plastic, let's say something like polypropylene. It has a certain viscosity, you know, the way what it flows when it's all melted down. Now imagine you're trying to push that melted plastic, which might be kind of like honey, through a narrow channel.
Okay, so it flows, but there's some resistance.
Exactly. Now, toss in a bunch of those tiny glass fibers. It's like adding little bits of sand to that honey. Suddenly, it doesn't flow quite as smoothly. That's because the fibers increase the internal friction of the melted plastic.
So it's like adding grit to that milkshake we were talking about earlier. You can still drink it, but it takes more effort.
That's a perfect way to put it. And in injection molding, that extra effort means you need higher pressure to inject the plastic. The machine has to work harder to push that reinforced plastic through the mold, especially with those complex parts or thin sections.
Fascinating. So it's not just about making the plastic stronger. It's about how those little reinforcements change the entire flow.
Yeah.
Are there any other surprises these little fibers bring to the party?
Oh, yeah. Tons. Remember when we talked about shrinkage? Well, glass fibers can actually mess with that too, but not always in a straightforward way. Depending on the type of plastic and how those fibers are arranged, they can either reduce shrinkage or make it shrink differently, maybe even pull it in a different direction.
Wait, so adding these things can actually change the way the plastic shrinks as it cools?
Yeah.
That's kind of weird. I thought they would just make it shrink less overall.
It's not always that simple. The base plastic wants to shrink a certain way as it cools, naturally, but when you introduce those stiff glass fibers, they create their own stresses, and they can actually change that whole shrinkage pattern.
So it's like they add some internal scaffolding, guiding the shrinkage in a different way.
Precisely, and that's why it's so important to really understand the properties of the specific reinforced plastic you're using. It's not enough to just say, okay, I'm using glass-filled nylon. You got to get into the specifics. What type of glass fibers? How much is added? How are they oriented? All that stuff.
It's wild how something so tiny can make such a big difference in the whole process. I'm starting to see why you said there's no one-size-fits-all approach to this.
You got it. It's all about understanding how these things work together and then finding the right machine that can handle what the material needs, what the mold needs, and what you want the final product to look like. And speaking of the machine, let's shift gears a bit and talk about some of the key specs.
Sounds good. Talked a lot about all the demands on the machine. But what are some of those key things that tell us whether a machine can actually handle it all?
Well, one of the most important is clamping force, which we talked about before. It's basically the muscle of the machine, the force that keeps that mold closed against all that pressure from the plastic.
Right. And we know that the size of the product, the shape, and the material all play a role in how much clamping force you need. What else do we need to consider?
Another big one is shot size. That's basically the maximum volume of molten plastic the machine can inject at once, kind of like the capacity of a syringe.
So if I'm making a big, thick part, I'll need a machine with a larger shot size than if I'm making something small and intricate.
You got it. It's all about matching the shot size to the volume of your product. If you pick a machine with a shot size that's too small, you'll end up with incomplete parts, or short shots where the mold doesn't fill all the way.
And I'm guessing going too big with the shot size could also cause problems.
You're right. Using a machine that's way too big for the part can lead to all sorts of inconsistencies. And you could even damage the material over time from all the extra heat.
Okay, so we've got clamping force and shot size. What else should we be looking at when we're comparing machines?
Injection speed is crucial, especially when you're working with materials that cool down and harden quickly. It's all about how fast that molten plastic gets pushed into the mold.
I see. So for those thin-walled parts we talked about, where the plastic cools fast,
Yeah.
you'd need a machine that can inject really quickly, right? Otherwise, it'll solidify before the mold is even full.
Exactly. But it's a balancing act. Too slow, and the material might freeze off before filling the mold. Too fast, and you risk creating other defects, like flash or weld lines.
Weld lines. I've never heard of those. What are they?
Think of them as weak points in the part. They happen when two flows of plastic meet but don't fuse completely together. And they can pop up when you inject too fast because the material starts to cool down a bit before it has a chance to fully merge.
So it's like a seam where the two halves didn't bond right. That doesn't sound good.
It can definitely compromise the strength of the part, making it more likely to break or crack under stress. It's all about finding that sweet spot. Not too fast, not too slow.
This is so interesting. It's like picking the right injection molding machine is kind of like conducting an orchestra. You have to make sure all the instruments, all the machine specs in this case, are in tune and working together perfectly.
I love that analogy. And just like a conductor has to understand each instrument, you've got to grasp how each machine spec works with the material, the mold, and how you design the product.
And we've definitely learned there are a lot of moving parts. I'm already feeling a lot more confident tackling this topic, but I'm sure there's even more to explore. Like we talked about plate and size and tie bar spacing. I'm curious to hear more about those and how they fit into all of this.
You're right. We haven't really gone into detail on those yet. Let's dive into that next and see how they impact not just the mold design, but the overall functionality of the machine.
Okay, so let's talk about plate and size and tie bar spacing. I get that they have something to do with how much space there is inside the machine, but how does that actually matter when you're trying to choose a machine?
So picture the platens as like the stage where all the molding action happens. They're those big metal plates that hold the two halves of the mold in place. And the platen size, that basically tells you how big of a mold you can fit in there.
So if I've got a really bulky mold, I'm going to need a machine with bigger platens so it can all fit.
Exactly. If you try to use a machine with platens that are too small for your mold, it's like trying to bake a giant cake in a tiny oven. It's just not going to work. You'll either have to change your mold design or get a bigger oven, or in this case, a machine with bigger platens.
Got it. And what about tie bar spacing? We talked about it a little before, but I'd love to get a clearer picture of what it is and why it matters.
Remember those strong vertical bars we talked about, the ones that support the clamping unit? Those are the tie bars. And the space between them, that's the tie bar spacing. And basically, that space limits how wide your mold can be.
So even if the platens are big enough, if the mold is wider than that tie bar spacing, you're out of luck.
Yep, that's right. You've got to make sure that your mold can fit comfortably within that space between the tie bars. It's a really important measurement that a lot of people forget about, but it can cause some major issues if you don't think about it beforehand.
Going through all this with you is really making me realize that picking an injection molding machine, it's about way more than just matching the tonnage to the size of the product, which is what I always thought it was. It's really about looking at the whole picture, how the material behaves, all the little quirks of the mold, and all the physical limits of the machine itself.
Absolutely, you're exactly right. Every project is different, every material acts a little differently,
Right.
and every design throws its own curveballs. There's no shortcut, no easy formula. It all comes down to looking at all these pieces, figuring out how they work together, and then finding that one machine that's perfect for your specific project.
This has been awesome. I feel like I came in here totally clueless, and now I've got a much better understanding of how to choose an injection molding machine.
That's what we like to hear.
I feel like I've had a ton of those aha moments during this conversation, like when I realized how much those tiny glass fibers can change how the plastic shrinks, or how important that tie bar spacing is.
Those aha moments are what make it all worth it.
Totally. So, before we wrap up, we have one last question for you, our listener. After taking this deep dive with us, what was your biggest aha moment? Was there anything that really surprised you or maybe changed how you think about injection molding machines?
Hold on to that thought, because that's what's going to keep you learning and exploring. It could lead you to dig deeper into different materials, mold designs, or even the latest machine tech.
And hey, maybe your next deep dive with us will be all about one of those things. But for now, thanks for joining us on this wild ride. We hope you found it as insightful and as fun as we did.
Keep those questions coming, keep digging deeper, and never stop exploring the amazing world of injection molding.